Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
Happy Family Literacy Week.
That's right. Isn't it Literacy Day today?
Today is the day?
Yes.
How Wednesday exciting.
It's National Literacy Day.
Well, then we really are on trend.
Aren't we?
Like we always are, yeah. Really.
We're but, kind of a big deal. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we are kind of a big deal.
Well, speaking of a big deal, we have a special guest in studio today.
Yes.
The mastermind, one of the masterminds
behind. This is my showing up with research. This is the person I brought instead of research.
Yeah. Instead of a piece of paper.
Yeah, because she's filled to the brim with literacy facts and information.
That's right.
We love her so much. Welcome, Violet Pilkey.
Welcome, Violet. Thanks. I'm really excited to be here.
Violet, you work part-time for the Art Center, and you also work part-time for the Literacy Alliance. Is this correct?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so you really are full of all kinds of valuable information about literacy.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty relevant for me to be here today.
So. Yeah.
And you've been with them since the beginning? This is the fourth year of Unplug and Play?
This is the sixth year, actually. It started in 2010. So last year was the big five.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah, it started in 2010 here in the Shuswap. Yeah. Anyway, it started in 2010. And yeah. I started with them in 2012. So, yeah.
So you're a veteran now.
Yeah, I guess so.
You got your degree in Unplug and Play.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Unplug and Play. So what is the purpose of that particular week, that event?
Well, Family Literacy Day, which is today, the 27th, it happens on the 27th annually across Canada, started in 1999 by ABC Life Literacy. And so we took it on out here in BC. It's gotten pretty big out here. And we focus on unplugging from our devices to get back to basics. And we like to play with our families, do things like cooking, reading books, going out for skating, all kinds of activities that don't involve screens.
Right.
So there's lots of reasons that you would want to unplug from a screen. And, you know, kids are increasingly spending most of their days on screens. It used to be that people,
I know. We're talking hours and hours.
Yeah, we used to think it was about 7 hours. Last year it went up to 7.5. Participaction is saying that kids are spending 7 hours, 50 minutes, so basically 8 hours. Other sources are saying it's getting up to 9 hours a day on average. And so some kids are spending less, but others are spending even more than that.
That is quite terrifying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard that the teenager rate, 14 to 17, 9 hours a day.
Yeah.
And the tweener is about seven, yeah.
So. Yeah, and they're starting younger too. There's kids in elementary school that have cell phones and they are sleeping with them.
Oh. What is our world going to be in 20 years, right? Like, what experiment are we running here to see what it's going to be like to grow up on a screen? It's going to be very interesting. I hope we don't become automatons.
I hope not.
Yeah. Okay, so.
Well, we're in transition. It is relatively new technology, and it's we're the first of our civilization to have to, the first generation of our civilization to have to deal with this. So unplug and play is a strategy to remind people to disconnect and reconnect to the real world.
Yeah,
it's really about balance.
Yes.
Like we understand that screens are a huge part of our everyday lives, and we don't want kids to not interact with screens because they're going to have to when they're older anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just about balance. It's like, sure, spend an hour on your screen doing research or reading or, you know, being entertained, and then go outside for an hour.
Yeah.
Just have to be mindful of that. Yeah.
Well, I did hear, I'm not sure about this, but there is a form of myopia, I think, that a lot of kids are suffering from, and they think it's just lack of daylight. So even there's a, you know, people think that it's possibly looking at your screen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That more and more kids are needing glasses and having eye issues, eye strain. But it's not just that, and it might be that, but it's also this being inside all the time.
Yes.
And if you don't have your eyes flooded with light, you tend to develop this myopia.
Oh.
So, and then it possibly, I don't know, I'm not a scientist, exacerbated by the fact that you're using a light-emitting reading source. So it's kind of a double problem right now, this being inside and reading off a screen.
Right. And it's more that, you know, we're obsessed with it because we're obsessed with it.
And it's really cool.
Right?
Well, and they're toys.
Right? And it's a culture of, like Violet says, it's a culture of of cool. I have a cell phone. I have a tablet. Let's play Minecraft, you know. Not to discount all of the things that can happen as a result of giving kids access to that technology. But, you know, we also used to crash cars more than we do now, right? Mm-hmm. So we're getting, I think we're getting better. I mean, we have to acknowledge that this is a thing and we're learning how to manage it.
Right.
Right.
So one of the ways is unplug and play.
Absolutely.
So, fantastic. So we've got, there's actually a huge number of events in the community that celebrate unplug and play, that encourage especially young kids to play with their families. What kind of like activities are there possibly for older kids, ones that are a little bit less likely to, you know, jump in a ball pit?
Well, it's
or have story time.
That's a little bit difficult. There definitely are more events targeted towards preschool ages and school age kids, but things like the curling, I think anyone likes, like adults love curling, right?
Yeah. Unplug and Play taught my kids to curl. We went to that one event.
Oh.
And as a result, we joined for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, just because of Unplug and Play.
Yeah. And then there's things like snowshoeing and yoga nights.
Yeah.
So that's fun too.
Yoga is a great way to spend an evening with your kids. There's
Absolutely.
A couple of really great resources, books that I got that were given to me years ago. One was called A Child's Garden of Yoga, and it's basically how to do yoga with kids.
Yes.
It's really awesome. Of course, you know, can't seem to get my kids to come upstairs and see me do yoga.
Mm-hmm. But it's that physical aspect, too, that is so important, right?
It absolutely is. And once you start moving your body, you kind of forget, oh, yeah, right, this feels good, right?
Like, yeah, it's also very relaxing and can help with that anxiety that we feel now more days being so connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we learn so much through physical play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have boys, and they don't like to read.
Yeah.
And it's like making them eat broccoli. So I let them try and work it out in other ways. Now, if that means they come up with a project, or, you know, they're mechanical, or they want to try an experiment, or, right? So we do a lot of building jumps in the backyard, or, right? But, you know, maybe there is some screen time research to figure out how to do it, but then they go and do it.
Yeah.
Right? So I still think they're learning.
Yeah.
Well, screens aren't bad inherently. And when it comes to kids using them, if they're not going to read a book, but they'll read a story or information on a screen, then give them a screen.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're replacing reading books with screen time, that's when it becomes a problem.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I guess it's like, as you say, it's a tool.
Mm-hmm.
A screen is a tool.
Yeah.
My kid learned how to solve the Rubik's Cube on YouTube.
Yeah, well,
right?
YouTube is actually a pretty good learning source.
And he has spent, I kid you not, hundreds of hours physically playing with the Rubik's Cube.
And that's probably strengthening his fingers and his dexterity and all kinds
of things.
Maybe
that could be a thing next year.
Oh, that would be awesome for
Unplug
and
Play. And he said, Mom, I learned the algorithm on how to, and I'm like, you know what an algorithm is?
Wow. Amazing.
I'm impressed. But so, right, it's how you use it.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And like you've said before, it's a tool. Your computer is a tool, just like a pencil. It does what you want it to do.
It does anything you want it to do.
You have to stay in control.
But when the pencil starts taking you over, it's time to drop it and walk a bee.
Yeah.
Right? Even go for a walk. Doesn't have to be like, I love the snowshoe idea, though, because it's so put your boots on and out you go. You don't have to, like, buy skis and bindings and a pass.
It's a really popular event.
Is it? And that was is that tomorrow night or was that last night? There was a snowshoe event. But we have to give props to the Shoe Shop Literacy Alliance because they have done so much work and there's literally hundreds of events. And then now it's so big that other groups are doing things that you guys don't even know about.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Every school has its own little thing.
Yeah, each school is doing its own thing.
Yeah.
And that's what we want. We want the community to do its own activities.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, this thing is on fire, right?
Like, it's so much fun.
At council, we read to each other in council chambers. And then Mr. Harrison told us about all the things that were going on at the school. And the list went on and on and on. Basketball, volleyball, this, that. I couldn't believe it. Like, I don't think they're doing any schoolwork this week. And I think that's great. I have boys and they learn much better through doing than sitting, which is punishment for them.
Yeah.
They don't like to sit.
Well, and part of that is exacerbated. Like, kids are having trouble with attention and sitting still because they're not getting enough physical activity in their daily life. If they do go out and play outside, then it's easier for them to sit still for like an hour and learn.
Mm-hmm. And this idea of delivering content in a, here, you sit here, I'll stand in front.
And write it on the board.
And I'll tell you all my stuff.
Yeah.
And then you'll remember all the stuff I told you.
Yeah.
It's, you know, experiential learning. I think Unplug and Play is leading the charge, you know, even in terms of this, the education model. You know, we know that outdoor education is more effective, especially with boys.
Yes.
And there's, you know, Bruce Mao, the designer.
Right.
Right. So he wrote a book called The Fifth Teacher. The design is the fifth teacher. And he said, if you go back in time, like if someone from the 1800s came back today, the only thing they would recognize would be a classroom.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty mind-blowing, right?
That it's the same.
Yeah. So we might think unplug and play is like a diversionary tactic to get kids off their screens, if only for a week. I actually think it's a much larger movement to rethink how we learn.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, and everybody learns differently.
Mm-hmm. So. Everybody learns differently.
Well, they finally are starting to figure that out. I mean, I guess that...
You have to learn that how information, to learn, right?
Yeah, but that information has been around for a long time. Science has showed us that there's, you know, kinetic learners and visual learners, audio learners. It's just that there's not been the resources or maybe the will to change the classroom environment to respect all those different learning styles. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, fair enough, right? If you're talking, if the bottom line is always money, you got to be able to do the mediocre sort of, you know, effort in order to get the largest number of kids through the system.
Yeah. Well, some schools are actually starting to change the way they do that.
Yes.
And one is actually A.L. Fortune in Enderby.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they've completely changed their school setup. They have large rooms with small tables and everybody works sort of independently, but there's multiple teachers in the room that they can talk to. And older kids are like grade 12s are in there with grade 8s, and so they can help each other, and it's a lot more collaborative. They've increased their graduation rate into the high 90s now.
Wow. That is a great story.
That is. Wow. And I know that at Jackson, I'm sure this is at Sullivan too, but I know just because my girls are at Jackson, that the whole curriculum is changing as of next year, and they're doing less content coverage. Like, you know how it's always about getting
like dates.
All of these, yeah, all of this content packed into their brains.
1749.
Yeah, less.
1789.
Less of that and more in-depth study. Mm-hmm. So more opportunity for them to say, well, I'm really interested in this. I really want to get to know what this is all about. So, you know, I mean, that's really positive movement. It's not, it's a little late. I mean, I think other countries around the world have been doing this for 20 years, but at least we're moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. So that's
positive. And BC, it's hard when you're in it to see it, but BC is quite forward looking in terms of education, I hear.
Yeah.
From other sources.
Oh.
Some other school districts are much more conformist. You know, this is the learning outcome and this is how you will deliver the curriculum and, you know, check this box and fill this out and write this test. And so BC's education plan is more open than that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So teachers are given curriculum outcomes and then they can sort of reverse engineer, okay, how am I going to get this 7-year-old to get that concept? So there are teachers in our school district who do amazing things to teach, you know, physics and science. Mm-hmm. And I saw a little class out on the foreshore yesterday, right? Like in the mud flat, you know, where the bay is. And I kept thinking, oh, I hope there's not too much water. I hope they don't sink through, but it would all be mucky anyway. Anyway, but that's a form of literacy.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that's, I guess, we could talk about, okay.
We're with Violet Pilkey from the Shuswap Literacy Alliance, or the Literacy...
Literacy Alliance of the Shuswap Society.
Literacy Alliance of the Shuswap Society. This sounds lovely.
And Lass is leading the charge on Unplug and Play Week, celebrating Family Literacy Day. And you can get a lot of information on literacy events on Lass's website, which is?
ShuswapLiteracy.ca.
Oh, that's easy. Great. Okay, so all I really wanted to say was that one of the things that occurred to me when I'm thinking about the topic today was that if we don't pay attention to literacy rates and quality literacy rates, then we're going to lose the content that we now consider sort of not really, you know, the very thing that's drawing us away from literacy. So like movies, music, YouTube videos, right? Like those things are made up of content. And if you don't... think deeply and read a lot and acquire knowledge and experience, you don't get content for those things. Mm-hmm. So like, where are our future screenwriters going to come from if those kids are not right now reading quality stories that have content, mm-hmm. right, that have an extensive vocabulary and meaningful thoughts and, you know, instead of just surface dialogue and action and leaps, great leaps in time. So, yeah. So anyway, that was my kind of thought about how it could affect the arts industry in the future if we don't pay really close attention right now.
Absolutely.
Well, it can affect it quite a bit. Like, we know that reading from a very young age, even to kids who don't speak yet, helps them to grasp abstract concepts and apply logic, recognize cause and effect, and apply judgment. And so if we don't have those things, then our arts are definitely going to suffer.
Right.
And I mean, the self-reliance piece, the idea that you can write something and you can draw something and you can make something, right, that's unique to the world.
Yeah.
And you can make a YouTube video and, with your parents' permission. You know, that. So how do we empower, give them the right tools? And as Violet says, the littler they are, the better.
Yeah.
And social cues, right, because 90% of language... I'm not sure if it's 90, but a very high percentage of language and understanding is nonverbal.
Right.
And if we're always looking at our screens, we're missing all the cues. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's a big problem.
So that's actually a form of literacy too then, right? Like the physical...
Social literacy, yeah. yes. Mm-hmm. Literacy is just your basic foundational skills in any area. So there's health literacy, there's... reading and writing, which is what most people think of when they think of literacy, but it's everything, physical literacy.
Hmm. Yes, learning how to skip rope.
Skipping literacy.
It's, you know, learning how to play dodge the ball.
Oh, gosh, I cannot believe there's still dodgeball in the schools. Like, is there any worse form of punishment for socially difficult kids, right? Like,
yes. Dodgeball?
Terrible. No. Yeah.
Or short girls?
And short girls with glasses.
Oh, okay, yeah. It's
No, it's a terrible thing. Stop.
It's the
everybody.
High
stop
school
it.
Equivalent of the Roman Colosseum to me. Because I used to always be the last one because I was an easy, you know.
Yeah.
Well, oh, and then they all gang up on you.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. Get rid of the tough ones and then leave me in for
the
end.
Oh, my gosh.
I probably still have welts.
But. I could not believe it when my kids told me that, oh, yeah, today Jimmy played dodgeball. I'm like, what? That's like I thought some... parental group would have gotten together and banned it from the world, but
ball.
No,
like they still did. But those are all literacy: basketball rules, volleyball rules. I even know what volleyball rules are, for heaven's sakes. I don't even like volleyball, but I learned it. Right?
Yes, that's true.
Right?
PE,
skating as a group, which go one way, then you go the other way.
Yeah. Like, so as much as you know, like if you're in high school and you're in phys ed and you have to do basketball and you have to do square dancing, you have to do badminton, even if you don't like those things, they're all important aspects to learning about your body's movement ability and physical literacy.
Because you're literally learning how to relate to other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned a lot of spatial awareness in PE.
Totally.
Spatial awareness.
And I mean, that's what literacy is to be able to be literally aware of your surroundings.
Yeah.
So it's not just about, can I fill out a job application or can I figure out the math
book or something.
For the bus? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's how do I relate to the rest of the world?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's because huge. That's communication.
Well, yeah, the core of literacy is communication and people having the basic skills to express their own ideas and thoughts and feelings, which is basically what art is.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's why we say all art is storytelling. You know, everything comes down to storytelling. We're all sharing our story. We're all sharing our lives, sharing our experiences, thoughts, ideas. It's what we do. Mm-hmm. So if we aren't building those things from a young age, where are the art makers of the future too? Mm-hmm.
Yep. Now Unplug and Play is mostly focused on young children and families of grade school kids. Is that a fair
assumption? In this area, yes. Family literacy is really where we do a top down from the parents. We try to give them skills to give to their children to increase the entire family's literacy levels. For Unplug and Play, mm-hmm. generally, we work with other groups and they put on most of the events. And so, you know, if the library wants to do a story time, then that's their event. But they also do things like Lego building, and that's good for all ages.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
I want to do Lego building. I saw that. I was like, ooh, let's go to Lego building. But literacy is also, I mean, for LASS also works, you know, with the cyber seniors and the...
Yeah, and we also do advocacy for other adults. We are lucky in Salmon Arm, we have Okanagan College, and we also have Shuswap Settlement Services for immigrants coming in. And so we work with those two groups as well, and WorkBC to provide information and tell people where to go to get those basic skills. And most of them are free, actually, mm-hmm. for basic adult education.
And I've done some work with the school district on the reading program, and I think I learned as much from those kids as they would have learned from me. It's a two-way street, right? Like, I would suggest that with the 9 refugee families coming, they all need to learn English. We all need to learn how to deal with new families. That's a form of literacy, too.
Yep.
So it's not like, oh, I'm literate. I can read, I can write, I don't need this. We all need it.
Yeah.
Right? I think.
Well, that actually leads to another question that Violet might be able to help us with. And how can the average community member who may not have little kids at home but wants to somehow contribute to this whole thing, how can they help? How can they get involved?
Well, there's lots of ways, a couple off the top of my head. You can support organizations that are working with a education and literacy mandate. So, little plug for Shuswap Literacy here, but there are other groups that are doing that as well, including the college. They have free ESL and adult literacy programs, so you can support groups that are doing that. Attending Unplug and Play events is a big one, because once we get our numbers up, it really makes a big difference when we're trying to lobby, like, the provincial and federal governments, that there's a need for it. Yeah. You can become a member or join a newsletter of the literacy organizations. You can go to the library. Mm-hmm. There's an idea. and then I know the schools, they often do sort of town hall meetings to discuss where the school should go, and they want input from people. And it's not just parents. Everyone's allowed to go and talk about their ideas if they have an idea for, you know, a way that the school can cut costs, or, you know, just to show your support that arts or literacy shouldn't be the first things that they cut when they need to save money. And then definitely I would say just get involved. Like, there's lots of organizations.
Show up, right?
It's kind of hard nowadays to get people to leave their house. Everything is in your house that you really need, it seems, except other people. So if you leave the house, you can go to meetings, AGMs, other community meetings. They're often, and even planning meetings by municipalities and stuff, they're often open to the public. Mm-hmm. So you can go in, you can listen, see what's going on, and talk to other people and get involved.
Yeah. Well, that's such a good point. If we don't... I always say that for people that don't vote, I say, well, then you're not allowed to complain. Mm-hmm. So it's the same kind of thing. If you don't show up and go to things, you're not allowed to say there's not enough this, or kids are on screens too much. You just can't say it unless you're out there learning about it and trying to do something about it.
There's a lot of that happening nowadays. There's very small amounts of the same volunteers sort of making all the changes and doing all the work, and then other people are complaining that it's not happening fast enough when they could, you know, join in and make it go faster.
Yep. Because it's up to us. Just like we said in our last show, when people are saying to the government, what are you going to do about this? Well, the government's looking at us saying, what are you going to do about this?
What are you going to do?
Because we are the creative resources, right? Like, we can't depend on one governing body to solve all the problems. We are the solution makers.
Well, I think part of that comes, like, with the voter apathy and people not really taking ownership of solving problems and expecting the government to do it. Part of that has to do with lower literacy levels. The less literacy that a person has, the more apathetic they are, the less they can understand the process, the more they just want to check out.
Right.
And so they don't get involved. And it's sort of like a backwards, or it's like a snowball, like a negative snowball is what I would call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, snowball going back up the hill.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you know.
It's a good visual.
I know that I'm getting more and more... having attention issues the more online research or things that I do, because if something isn't given to me in small little chunks of information, I move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So as soon as I see this great long article, I'm like, oh, I can't read that whole thing. I don't have time for that. So just give me something else. Give me a little, like, list of bullet points or something, right?
Yeah. Give me the blurb. Give me the short version.
Yeah. Yes. So I think that overall, you know, a media, the way that the media dispenses information and the way that online presents information, we're not taking the time to learn the in-depth processes that we need to know in order to make informed decisions about voting and about how to get involved and stuff.
Yeah.
Because we're just too impatient. We're becoming too impatient.
Yeah. And there's lots of reasons for that. And part of it is not just impatience, but really our celebrity-focused cultures, because that sort of makes us want to escape from our everyday life, which is sometimes hard and mundane. You know, yeah. We have to work a lot just to sort of do the basics to, you know, have our house and be able to afford the things we want. And most people don't spend their time doing the things they really want to do, the things they would really love to do. And then what do they do in the 2 hours before bed? They watch TV, you know.
I know, it's kind of because we're tired.
We're tired.
Right? We get that, the physical and mental exhaustion. And it's kind of a funny thing. And actually that, what you say about having lives that are mundane, it is kind of an interesting thing we've got right now, that we expect our lives to be really exciting and fulfilling and having wealth and having things. Like we somehow seem to have a basic expectation of that now. And so when there's times of complete, you know, like putting one foot in front of the other and that feeling like that we're not completely fulfilled, maybe we're feeling a bit like we're failing.
Yeah, I think that's probably a big part of it.
We're not. We're just kind of ordinary beings getting through our lives, and there's not going to be ecstasy moments every single day. Mm-hmm. We have to be okay with that.
Well, and part of the celebrity culture kind of breeds that. It's exciting, right?
Yeah.
Life is not one episode of Friends after another.
Exactly.
But in a way, where if you're fed a steady diet of you know, sugary cereal type of content, you come to expect that, right?
And then vegetables and fruit don't taste very good anymore.
I've also read that reading fiction is actually very good for your mental health, because it takes you places where you can sort of problem solve by proxy through the characters that you're reading. So, like, if you're having a bad day, I mean, pick up a book.
Yeah.
Maybe Such a Long Journey or A Fine Balance. And, you know, suddenly your my dishwasher's broken problem doesn't seem like such a big deal.
Fiction books are the best form of escapism.
Absolutely. Yes. And we need perspective. And that's a form of literacy, too, is to be able to have a perspective on, that's a drag. Or, I'm going to be late paying that bill. Or I can't have that thing. But, you know,
it's not the end of the world.
Not if you know.
So escaping reality through a book sometimes gives you a reality check.
In fact, on CBC some months ago, I was listening to Writers and Company, and they have a book therapy. So depending on what your issue is, they'll subscribe a list of books.
Oh, I love it. That's
isn't that
really
great?
Cool.
Much better than Prozac.
Yes. So what I'd like to address now is, why is it important for us all to support literacy? It's almost like the, remember how we had a discussion, I think, a year or two ago about people who say, I don't have kids in school, so why should I pay school taxes? Like, why should that matter to me? And we had all these wonderful reasons why it's important to maintain quality schools in your district, right? It affects all aspects of community life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same way in a way for literacy, right? If we can say, well, we're very well read. I'm good. I'm fine. I only spend 1 hour a day on the screen. I'm good. I don't need to do this. So why is it important for everybody to pay attention to this issue right now?
Well, some of the reasons are, just the higher literate communities tend to work better together, which is always a positive thing. You get things done faster. But some of the things that we know that higher literacy levels correlate to are higher, better education and higher graduation rates in school, increased health and well-being of the people who live in the community, which also cuts down on health costs and increases quality of life. And things like crime rates go down in the higher literate communities, which is also very important. It makes people feel safe and there's less loss. And all of these things actually affect the economy. And people who are more literate are more involved in the community, and they're better able to advocate for their children if they have them. And all of these things, they prop up the community and make it a better place to live, and they also, it can increase income levels for most people, which generally leads to a stronger economy.
Well, there you go. Clearly, that's all we need to do to fix the world. Just get more literate.
It's like everything. Everything is tied together.
It is.
You know, and in the business community, the same thing. Literacy is a significant problem for employers. Many employers report that that's one of their major challenges is the literacy of their employees. Hmm. And it affects turnover and productivity. So when we talk about the fourth revolution or economic revolution, it's really deeply tied to how literate the population is.
Yeah.
Right? So we need to abandon this idea that literacy is some sort of elitist, I don't have time for the symphony, I'm trying to earn a living. You know, it's not about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about everybody contributing. Like, we can all contribute to literacy in terms of, you know, helping young people, mentoring young people, sharing your skill. If you're a gardener, help a neighbor who doesn't know how to garden. That's a form of literacy. It doesn't have to necessarily be a formal thing on a poster either, yeah. Right? It just has to be a community commitment that if you need help, you ask for it, and if you can provide help, you offer it. Like, it can be that simple, mm-hmm. I think. But
don't sit and wait to be asked.
No, please.
Mm-hmm.
Because you might wait a long time.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I know that because we're not scientists, we can't say anything for sure that might be not quite correct, but we do know that there's a difference between reading off of a screen and reading off of a page. So I'd kind of like to talk about that, about why it's important to keep reading off of paper.
Mm-hmm.
So you're the one that said that the light-emitting source is a different process.
Right, because light is wavelengths. Right? And your eye is a technical piece of equipment,
mm-hmm.
and the information, and then your memory storage works a certain... I mean, we are, in a way, computers are based on us, right?
Yeah.
So your light-emitting sources of information are absorbed through the eye and into the memory differently than light-absorbing, you know, a light-absorbing...
like a piece of paper.
A book, yeah.
Yeah.
The information on a piece of paper is stored in your brain differently than the information that comes off of a screen.
Right.
Now, it lives in, and Violet might be able to specify more, but it lives in your working memory for a while. So everything you ever learn, you never forget it. It's just whether you access it or not. Right? So everything you've ever seen or learned or heard or felt is all there in your backup drive. But it's how you access it.
Mm-hmm.
So it would seem to me that information that or stimulus that you got from a piece of paper is easier to retrieve than information you get from a screen.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
So important stuff like a will, right? You know, yeah. Contracts, all of these things, that paper thing is important, I think. Not just because it's a physical record, but also because of how we absorb the information.
Yeah. Part of it too is with memory, especially long-term memory, you need to remember more than just what you were sort of consuming as far as information, but also the surroundings. Where were you? You know, what was the temperature? Could you smell anything? Where on the page was that information? That helps, all those things help you retrieve that information later. And when you're just looking at a screen and endlessly scrolling, it's a lot harder to recall that information, mm-hmm. because you don't have that point of reference. It was in the top, you know, right-hand side of the page, or it was, you know, the first page after the end of the chapter kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't, it has no, you can't put it in.
Yeah, there's no place.
Yeah, yeah, you can't say, oh, I was reading in bed,
yes.
You know, or I was at the kitchen table with a cup of tea.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I know that I can recall information that I read in the Globe and Mail very easily when I'm trying to say to somebody, oh, I read an article 3 weeks ago, it was blah, 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 and I have all this information right there because I do remember seeing it. But I wouldn't be able to do that same thing off an article that I read on Facebook.
Yeah,
would never say about Facebook. It was on the top right-hand side.
Because yeah.
There's no reference, right?
Yeah.
In a way, like scrolls used to be, they just go on and on and on. So you couldn't. So this idea of a page, and being able to reference things in relation to each other is important because that's how our brain works. Mm-hmm. It's like a giant filing system back there. Like, okay, this is filed under ice cream.
It puts it in a neat file folder instead of just like throwing a bunch of paper in there and slamming the drawer.
Yeah. Maybe that's the difference. Maybe when you're on screen, all the paper is like piled up in a pile and you don't know what's where. Whereas if it's on a book, it's neatly filed in your brain.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
There. That's a theory.
Perfect that's what analogy. We decided.
Well, and
disprove
it's kind of
it.
Yeah. And we had this discussion before about, because I was taking notes on my phone when we were at a conference one time and you were scribbling away in your book. And after the fact, I had to go back home and write the stuff in my book because I looked at my notes on my phone and thought, I don't remember, like when I was listening to the guy and then typing what he was saying on my phone, I don't remember what he said while I was typing that thing. Mm-hmm. But when I'm writing, I can take notes and continue to listen to somebody so I can kind of keep the process going. So I had to go back right away and write down what I wrote on my phone so that I'd remember it and then start to think about some of the actual stories and
what he was saying.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it was like a double process. I should have just brought a book. Just like
I always take notes in a notebook or on paper because that's how I retain information. Yeah. I know as soon as I write it down, I will likely be able to recall that information a lot faster in conversation.
And that's proven now, isn't it?
Well, like
writing it does.
I think so. Well, because the physical we shouldn't discount how powerful our brains are, but my sense is that technology thinks it's so smart, it's actually sucking more of it takes more of our work to be able to use the technology, and it kind of unconnects us from being really in the moment. Like, it's easy. I could talk to you right now and write stuff down, no big deal.
Yeah.
But I can't talk to you and text at the same time.
Yeah.
Right? So in a way, the technology has a higher burden of your brain function.
Right.
Whereas a notebook is, how much simpler can it get?
And who knows what that's going to be like in the future, though, for kids, right? I don't know. It might just be because we're used to using pencils. And that's how we were raised.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
So we'll see how they start to. I mean, we'll see what handwriting looks like in 20 years, too, right?
Yeah. They're not even teaching that anymore.
Not cursive.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's not good.
Well, if there's time.
If there's time.
Mm-hmm. If there's, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we're all starved for time. But
I guess.
But then another, like, I don't, I think the act of physically writing down is also how we process information.
Mm-hmm. So it's an extra step in processing. Mm-hmm. So it's thought, really.
So, whereas if you do it on the screen, the computer, does the work. Or if you do it on the paper, your brain has to do the work. That's why it. Right?
Yeah.
I think.
It's true for me anyway.
Yeah. Well, I do know that
and doodlers,
that extra thought is always happening while you're writing things down. But maybe when you're typing on the screen, it's just the words. You're just kind of relaying, vomiting out the words.
Letter.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you're not actually having the deep thought in the back of your head.
Well, okay. So just for fun, I'm going to pretend my notebook is a keyboard and I'm going to start typing. I have no idea. Right? Because there's no, it's just the physical act of typing. Whereas if I have to shape the letter out with my pen or my pencil, then it's
you're kind of thinking more about it
as you go. You're thinking more about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's something right brain about that too, right? It's a
artistic.
It is. Yeah. It's an art form. Mm-hmm. Writing is an art form, a form of communication as always. But just, the act of drawing out each letter activates different parts of your brain than hitting a keyboard.
Yeah.
It's
kind of dumb.
We gotta stop using keyboards.
We just have to find the tool that works best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and we just have to remember that we can't stop using this tool, right? The pencil, the pen, we have to continue to use the tool so that we remember how to use the tool and not always use the computer because it's like we're just going to get out of practice, right? And that's what we don't want to happen.
No.
And we don't want to get out of the habit of reading books either. And I think that's something that happened with the Kindle and stuff like that for a while. Everybody was, woohoo, this is so perfect. I can take 20 books with me on my holiday without packing more than this thin little thing. Mm-hmm. And now I
think that's pretty much where its function has ended up.
Well, and this is, I'm kind of wondering, I don't see them as much mm-hmm. anymore. Was there a rise and fall of the e-reader?
I think the e-reader's leveled out.
I think it's just the e-reader is more of a tool, again, that you use for certain situations. Like, there's pros and cons to books and versus e-readers. I use both. So, some reasons that you would want an e-reader or to read an e-book is it's compact, it travels well, you can have a whole library on one tiny little device. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons that people like them. Also, you can instantly buy and download the books right away. As soon as you want it, it's there.
Yeah.
Cons, you have to charge it.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. You can't just, like, if it's dead, you have to wait until it charges.
If you're out on your sailboat, you don't necessarily have the ability to continue to read all your books.
You also need to have a device, either a cell phone or an e-reader, to read the e-books. You can't just pick it up off the shelf unless you already have the device. And then the light can affect your sleep if it's a light-emitting one. Mm-hmm. There are some that don't. But so that's a con. Books, you know, they don't travel well. One of the things that I saw when things like 50 Shades of Grey was really popular was that everyone can see what you're reading with a physical book. With an e-reader, they can't.
Yeah.
But books.
Yeah, there's the privacy perspective.
Books have, they're better for, you know, things with graphics on them. A physical book, you easily know on the page where you are, how much book you have left to read.
Yeah.
And it's more tactile, and you can get things like signed copies.
Yeah, so, which is kind of fun. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess it's, I mean, let's not assume that high tech is always the only tech there is. There's also low tech and no tech. No tech is good too.
Yeah.
Because we are the most highly technical
thing in the world,
mm-hmm. right? So let's not give over too much of our power to the machines, right?
Yeah.
So,
and now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Well, we're very skilled at finding the dramatic moments in the arts that match our topic, but this is a good one. It's the whole economic forum that just happened was pretty dramatic in itself.
Yes, the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland.
That was our dramatic moment last week, too, wasn't it?
Yes. We opened with that, didn't we? But it is a powerhouse of people.
Yeah.
Right? And the most technological, you know, we are the highest form of technology there is. And some would argue that those are the wealthiest and most influential people in the world. And so you can subscribe on Twitter or online, maybe not during Unplug and Play Week, but every day they issue all these studies. And so it's not just about hobnobbing and having receptions and stuff like that. They're always releasing studies that they've done. And one of them was the 10 skills you need to thrive in the fourth industrial revolution. And the difference between just 2015 and 2020 is quite significant. So in 2020, the top 10 skills you need in the workforce will be complex problem solving, critical thinking, creativity, people management, coordinating with others, emotional intelligence, which we tend to, you know, computers don't have emotions, judgment and decision making, service orientation, negotiation, and cognitive flexibility, which you get from
reading.
Yeah, I know.
And going outside and playing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a pretty clear line between where you need to start and where you need to get.
Yeah.
You know, and it spells out literacy.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, provincial government or federal government or, right?
Yeah.
Or companies who are thinking, what should we sponsor this year? Right. This mm-hmm. is really, the payoff is so ginormous, mm-hmm. which I know isn't a proper word, but I like it.
You can invent words. That's part of language evolution. So
they add new words to the dictionary every year.
Awesome sauce.
Yeah. Did you hear our show on language literacy, Violet?
I don't think
language of evolution.
The evolving.
Oh my gosh, it was hilarious because there's so many new words. So there was one paragraph I read out loud that it used the 20 words that were added to the dictionary.
Oh my goodness.
It was ridiculous. I could hardly understand what I was saying, never mind anybody else out there. So yeah. Anyway, and you wanted to make another point about e-readers.
If you go to the beach.
So e-readers are great for traveling, except if you want to read at the beach. Like, if you want to put your book down and go for a dip, somebody's probably not going to steal your old copy of, you know, Pride and Prejudice mm-hmm. off your towel. But they see a shiny, you know, Kobo or something, they're going to probably snatch it. So,
yeah.
And you can leave books in your car and they probably won't get damaged. Whereas if you leave an e-reader, the heat and stuff could affect it. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
There are pros and cons to both. And so I think just using whichever one you want in the right situation is
high tech, low tech, no tech.
Make those decisions.
Pick one. Right?
Yeah. And then, back to the drama of the skill development. So what else can we do to make sure that we have opportunities to develop critical thinking skills? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, except for, I understand that schools are developing curriculum, but once you're out of school, what else can we do to actually build those skills? It's not like you can go and take critical thinking at the college, right?
Well, you probably could, but really is about staying active. Read the paper. Like you talked about, join a board, go to meetings. But it can also be play board games, play cards. Yeah. My goodness, cards is a phenomenal way.
Do a puzzle. Those are my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Try a new skill. I mean, remember that, again, we are a very high form of technology and we need to be challenged all the time.
We need to exercise our brains. Right? And even if it's just trying a new recipe.
New recipe, new language, new skill. And the health benefits of that in terms of dementia-friendly communities, Alzheimer's, listen to music. Go to a concert. Mm-hmm. Go to a dance.
Yeah. And remember last week when we talked about how the brain only can... At least I think this was last week, only can solve a problem when it's actually present, or only can come up with creative solutions when it's presented with a problem. Mm-hmm. So the changing experience is what makes us have to resolve things. And so in order to generate ideas, we have to change our experience. So if you always go to a hockey game on Friday night, try going to the opera on a Friday night. And if you always go to the opera, go to a hockey game. Mm-hmm. Do something so totally different so that your brain is presented with this different experience, and then it generates a whole different
pathways. Or take a new route to work.
Yeah.
Like, you get so used to seeing the same things every day when you do the same things every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So your brain kind of shuts down and doesn't process.
But we've always done it that way.
Yeah.
Right?
That's your favorite line.
Don't do it that way.
That's the number one signal that you need to change.
Mm-hmm.
I've always done this.
Well, I think humans are hardwired to solve problems. I think, like, at our core, that's what we long to do in whatever way we choose to do it, whether it's through art or mm-hmm. building, constructing, making. Like, there's lots of makers out there that are trying new things, writing.
And this, the whole maker culture is having a huge comeback. There are, instead of universities, they're called makerversities.
Oh.
So you go and you learn how to make things.
Hmm.
Like, not necessarily read about things.
Yeah.
Like Arduinos, which are teeny tiny little computers that can do things that big computers can do, but they're very cheap and there's lots of information on how to make them. Raspberry Pi. We have a couple of those in our house.
You do?
Daryl is a very much a maker.
Oh.
That's what he does. And he makes art too. He likes to do some metal art. He makes stuff out of wood. He makes half of our furniture he made.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's a difference between people who are activities that you think aren't productive and activities that are still useful even though they're not productive, right? Like, for instance, knitting is a really good example. I always feel like when I'm knitting...
So good for your brain.
It is.
Knitting, and your fingers.
But I better be making something useful. But you know what? That's not the important part.
No.
The act of it is the important part. So maybe we need to kind of...
More important than watching Coronation Street.
Yeah. I'm sorry to say.
Which I do. I love Coronation Street.
If you get really good at knitting, you can do both.
Yeah. I don't know if I can do both. But see, that's the thing about at the end of the day, and I really don't like that. I mean, I literally mean at the end of your day. If you look at your output, right? As long as it includes I learned something new,
yeah,
or I tried something new, or I thought about something I never thought about, that's yeah. fine. It doesn't yeah. actually have to be, ta-da, a scarf.
Exactly.
Or, that's look, what, a beautiful thing I can know put on I, Pinterest. You know, like we're yeah. so driven by, look at my
achievement,
thing that I
accomplishment.
Did.
Yeah.
But it can all be up here in yeah. the noodle.
Exactly.
I made a
so
note.
Don't think of the product.
No.
Think of the process.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's exactly the same thing as in terms of how everybody can contribute to literacy in your community. It's not about the product, right?
No.
It's not about, okay, I just turned out a kid who can read better than when I started 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
No, it's about the collective long-term effect of a higher literacy rate
yeah.
and how it spreads, you know, and affects all different facets of our life.
Yeah, and our obligation to one another to, yeah. you know,
that made
share
me
the
think
wealth.
Of the Odd Socks Knitting Studio.
Yeah.
It's like a perfect thing, you know, community members come together. It's a free program that happens at the Art Center on Fridays, and they just sit together, they drink tea, they make, you know, whatever, whether it's a scarf or a sweater or a nothing, just a square. They knit, crochet, work on projects together, they talk, share mm-hmm. stories. And we've had, over spring breaks and stuff, had kids coming in, and then they learn how to knit.
Yeah, yeah. So they're picking up skills. And these people are willing to share, right?
Absolutely,
like these,
they are.
The knitters that come are so skilled. They have been knitting for years and years. And some of them are really, like, they're just inventing their own patterns all the time. And in fact, that's where the Knitted Tree was born, is at the Odd Socks group, because Kathy Johnson was knitting this crazy long sculptural piece of something. And somebody said, what is that? She's like, I don't know. Maybe it's a root. I've always dreamed of knitting a tree. And the whole project was born out of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just don't know what can happen when you get together and start making.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about sort of the, you know, the passing on of information, sharing with each other, building the skill level, building the literacy. And
mm-hmm.
if we don't do it, if we hold all that information inside of us and just age and die, then
well,
we're
not
contributing
to good for anybody,
wow.
right?
Yeah.
Like Yoda would say, it is our destiny.
Close with a Star Wars quote.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, sure. Hey, you know what? Star Wars has helped the literacy of many a teenage boy.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
They have books and stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All of the spin-off fiction.
Yes.
Well, and Harry Potter totally pulled.
Huge.
Yeah.
Right?
Enormous literacy leap with series. I know from personal experience, that's exactly what happened to my family.
Yes.
They, like, we would read and read and read to the kids, and then
boom,
whammo, when I stopped, it's like, no, give me the book. I'm just going to read it myself.
Yes.
That's another really great tip, actually. A lot of families are like, I don't know how to even start this, but as a family, you can listen to an audiobook or read a series out loud together, something like Harry Potter, and then go see the movie.
Yeah.
And you guys can talk about, you know, what are the differences? What were the same? You know, was there a part in the book that you thought was really important
mm-hmm.
that they didn't show in the movie?
Yeah.
That's a great way to increase family literacy.
And, you know, airwaves and the radio are so such important literacy tools in terms of sharing ideas. So,
yeah. And can I just say one more thing about the audiobook?
Yeah.
I love audiobooks, and it's not because I'm too lazy to read out loud, because I love reading out loud. I loved it when my kids were little. But car trips, that is just the thing.
The bomb.
Get yourself an audiobook for a car trip. It makes it go like wham, so fast.
Or a podcast, but audiobooks are great.
Yeah. It's just super fast trip. I love it.
That's
okay.
Exciting.
So we do have a bookmaking event at the gallery this coming Saturday as a celebration for Unplug and Play Week on the 30th. Right?
Yes, come and make a book. Yay,
you can make books. There's
book.
Three different bookmaking projects.
Oh, wonderful.
For little kids and medium kids, too.
Kids never forget
I think you
that
can
stuff.
Show up at 21 years of age and still enjoy making the books that we do at the gallery. So come in 11 till 3:30 on Saturday, January 30th. And then there's a million other events that LASS is either sponsoring or in other ways part of promoting that other groups are doing. You can find all of that on LASS's website, shoeswapliteracy.ca.
Yeah, and I know it sounds funny that we would put Unplug and Play stuff on our website and Facebook page. We are on Facebook too, and we put updates on there, but it's just the most effective way to get information out to people. We also don't want people to completely unplug. You know, an hour a day is awesome. If you can unplug for an hour a day, you're winning.
Yes, that's a win. That's right. You make a good point. You have to, it's not an all or nothing thing.
Absolutely.
And what's
balance.
A win for you? That's right.
It's all about balance. Okay, and then for other events, you can check our website. Sorry, again, go online.
It's an efficient tool.
Yes, it is a tool. We'll just use it as a tool and put it away when we're done with that tool. Mm-hmm. SalmonArmArtCenter.ca. If you click on participate, there's a listing by date of all upcoming arts events. And our Facebook page is Salmon Arm Art Center, where we update things that are happening in the center. So you're welcome to check out any of those and get involved and show up. We have a member show on right now, which is fabulous.
Oh, that's lovely.
53 works, 42 different artists.
It's beautiful. I was in there the other day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And thank you so much, Violet, for your time. I know it's like the busiest week of the year for you.
A little bit.
We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You should have your own press entourage or something.
Yeah, like, I kind of wish I could like clone myself in two or three places at once.
But. That's excellent. All right. Happy Literacy Day, everyone.
Happy Literacy Day.
See you next week.
See you next time.